I'm Sonia Morton Firth, and you're tuned in to the Sonia Morton Firth Show. Today, we go through some of the very best bits of 2023. This episode is full of actions to optimize your health, wealth, and mindset to get you into the right frame of mind for the year ahead.
You spit in a tube. A tube gets shipped to you, a test tube. You spit in it. You provide 5 milliliters of saliva. That gets shipped to a lab. Pretty straightforward and simple.
And can that be anywhere in the world? I mean, I'm in the UK. Presumably your labs are in Canada or the US?
Yeah, our labs are in the US and Canada. And we've recently started shipping a lot to the UK. There's a couple of people working with locally who have just, and plus, you know, where we met, we were at this conference, right? So we met a lot of people there. But yes, we have a lot of customers in the UK. It gets shipped, you ship it back. Our lab then extracts the DNA from your saliva and sequence it, which really just means reading it to understand which genes aren't working. Now, instead of reporting back to you, here's your genetic report, which is what geneticists think they're supposed to do. We instead speak to the problems, because me as a layman, I don't really care what version of what gene I have. I care what's wrong and how do I fix it. That's it. And it should be that simple. And if it's not, I'm probably not going to use it.
Yeah, because it's just a scientific report. You're like, what does that mean anyway? Where do I start with this?
And you get so disappointed. And that's how so many of these things are designed. So I designed it in the way that I wished it was when I started. And so we speak to some major systems, which I believe if you go through these seven, you've dealt with the majority of what causes all of our problems. The first is mood and behavior, everything about the brain. If I have your DNA, I know your personality to a T. I don't ever need to meet you or talk to you. Yeah. Because every neurochemical of your body. Yeah. Yeah. This is the way it is. I know it's shocking to hear, but so who you are.
Your mood is determined by your DNA.
Your mood is determined by neurochemicals, and those neurochemicals are driven by genetic instructions. So how do you experience pleasure? To what degree? Are you more of an addict? Are you more of a binger? Are you more prone to PTSD and trauma? Are you more of a drama queen that gives too much meaning to things, crying over spilt milk, right? All of these things are driven by the neurochemicals that allow you to experience these things. And we know how much of the chemical you make, how much of you bind, how quickly do you clear it? So how long did that experience last? And I can map out exactly who you are up here. Should you be an accountant? Should you be an entrepreneur? It's all in your DNA.
So, and that's not you doing some sort of psychometric testing, or no. You've got to fill in this. This is just by my saliva.
Yeah, just by your saliva. We use your DNA to understand exactly. I'll give you an example. Let's take brain drive neurotrophic factor. So brain drive neurotrophic factor drives neuroplasticity, but it also drives mood in the context of how much things mean, the weight of things, the burden, that crying over spilled milk response, whether it's good or bad news, it just means too much. So the Finnish population, people from Finland, have the most consistency of the worst possible BDNF for a single ethnicity, right? So they're very...
Because they've got high suicide rates as well, don't they?
Yes, they do, yeah. So Finland has this horrible BDNF, right? They're also voted the happiest country in the world. So there's this gap, like that doesn't add up. What's going on, right?
So
it's not the vodka. So what's going on is the use of a sauna is a potent upregulator. Remember we said we know what to recommend to manage your genes properly, right? So sauna is a potent upregulator of BDNF. So now in Finland, they use more saunas per capita than any country in the world. Why? Because when they don't feel good. And so it's become this habit that in every house there's a sauna, in every community center, and they're just doing it every day. So they have this gene that causes them to feel horrible and be moody and grumpy and give too much meaning to things. But they all do this thing that upregulates it and makes them feel good. Now, when they don't do that thing, they feel horrible. And then you have the suicide rates and you have the addiction. You have these other problems that come out of that. So taking that one little tidbit, and there's many neurochemicals we can talk about, we know exactly who you are and how you feel and how you react and what you need to do to not feel that way if you don't want to.
And also, what you said before, you can determine what someone should do. Yes. Let's face it, we can all should do whatever you want to do, but in terms of what's best for you, or what you're genetically programmed to do, although
yep.
I do think there's a lot, you want a bit of choice in that as well.
Exactly. So now this person.
But I know I was just going to say, I know, for example, I was in corporate life for close to 20 years, and I was miserable. I was very successful, driven, ambitious, climbed to the top of the ladder in a man's world, and woke up one day and went, what is this all about? I was totally unfulfilled.
Yeah. Right.
Had money, but just wanted more from life, and knew that I could never work for anybody again. And I don't, and can't now, and realize that freedom means so much to me.
Yeah. So even that wiring, the ability to make that decision is genetically driven. Some people can't make that decision, right? So it becomes very clear who you are. It becomes very clear that, and by the way, there's no such thing as good or bad when it comes to all of what we're talking about in mood and behavior. It's context. So the same person that we're saying, the drama queen that needs a sauna, well, guess what? If in their work, it might translate to deep thinking, a lot of meaning, like picture the scientist or the researcher that comes out with pages and pages and pages of information. The same thing that requires a sauna to make them feel like a good mood also drives their high quality work. So it's a context question. What am I doing with this tool I've been given, right? So we went on a tangent, but that's one of the seven things. We look at the brain and we understand how you think and why you feel anxiety, why you're depressed, et cetera, and how to unravel all that. Second thing we look at is diet and nutrition. So we talked about that. Micronutrients like vitamin D, C, zinc. What do you take? What dosage? And then macronutrients, et cetera. And even the behaviors around diet. Some people don't get satisfied from their meals because their palate, there's genes around how much I need in terms of the wow factor. Some people have slow versions of the gut signaling to the brain that it's full. And so they overeat, and they just need to know that they need to stop and drink some water and slow down. So everything around diet, nutrition, we've also mapped out. Then we look at sleep. So everything around, I can't fall asleep. I can't stay asleep. I sleep through the night, but when I wake up, I still feel like garbage. Like I didn't get high quality sleep. What's going on? So genetically, those are all different things.
This is an area where this is the bit that I'm quite suffering at the moment. I've always been a light sleeper. You know that term when people say you were a light sleeper. So things wake me up in the night, and I can wake up very easily. Other people can just lie and sleep through, you know, anything. World War III, they'd sleep through it.
So.
And now I can get to sleep, no problem. But I wake up at pretty much the same time every night, and I can't get back to sleep. And for some reason, the problems got worse over the past.
That's a perfect example, and that's something that we fix daily. And I'll tell you what's going on. Perfect example. So, and this is a perfect example of a single gene not having a single meaning or purpose, which is where geneticists got things wrong. And the serotonin gene, so 5-HTT-LPR, drives your serotonin response. And if I talk to the scientific community and tell them that this is the gene that's driving your outcome, they'll say no, because it's not a sleep gene, it's a brain gene. But that's not functional thinking. Your brain is what's preventing you from sleeping, and I'll explain it. So serotonin is your mood regulator. Like, how am I responding as appropriate for the stimulus that's coming in? Am I overreacting or underreacting? That's serotonin, right? And this is why these people that have serotonin dysregulation, which I would assume you also do, and we're going to verify that, often they could potentially be more irritable, distractible, excitable, because every little stimulus is given a priority that shouldn't.
I can't concentrate very well.
Yeah, and this is why.
And I literally, like, I like doing lots of different things, but I can't. Yeah. But something will really take my mind. I'm super interested and I want to immerse myself in it, but I might have a few of those things going on, and I get bored easily.
And this is why. Because your brain, because your serotonin dysregulated, your brain has a challenge prioritizing stimulus. What am I supposed to focus on? And it focuses on everything. Now, the superpower is apply this to your work, and you see every little detail and nuance that your partners and colleagues didn't see. And so it gives you this superpower of, I'm a lawyer, I'm an accountant, I can forensically take a look and just catch every T and every I, but it also creates this anxiety because people don't see it. And it's like, I'm frustrated. what about this? What about this? And they just don't see it. So we can talk again just about serotonin for an hour. But this is the thing that now when you fall asleep, so your circadian rhythm or the same BDNF gene that I said causes Finnish people to be grumpy, which is why they need the sauna, also regulates your clock, your circadian rhythm. And if that's for you, it sounds like it's working good, which is why you're not having a challenge falling asleep. Your circadian rhythm is good. But there's two kind of major halves to sleep. There's the recovery. So you're getting into what's called deep sleep, where your body's dealing with everything you did the day before, detoxification, lymphatic drainage of the brain, lymphatic drainage, all of that. The second half is more preparation for the next day. Let me make my neurochemicals. I'm going to make some hormones. I'm getting ready for what's coming, right? So in that second half, your brain knows that at some point you're supposed to wake up in this half. It knows that in the first half, it's not. And the way that it wakes up is that serotonin gets bound and then your brain knows it's time. And the signal is sunlight coming through the window.
So before people sort of start Googling and just trying it left, right, and center.
I have that. Where do I get it?
Yes, where do I get it? Are there, firstly, how do you know you absolutely need it? And would you recommend source? I mean, we're here in the UK. I'm not even sure. A lot of things are not available here where they are available in the US and in Canada. Are there places that you recommend, or is there literature or information that you provide on this?
Good question. So to begin with, on my podcast, that which is the Biohacking Superhuman Performance podcast, I've interviewed quite a lot of people. One of the reasons why I started that podcast was because I was wanting to know more about peptides. And I'm like, well, how am I going to get these people to talk to me? And it was like, I know, I'll start a podcast and then they'll talk to me. There's actually an entire episode that I did devoted to BPC-157. Oh. There are entire episodes devoted to bioregulator peptides. Having said that, the BPC is a very interesting peptide because it can be taken in many different ways. A lot of the peptides, especially the longer chain peptides, not the bioregulators, but a lot of those peptides have to be injected by subcutaneous injection because they are proteins. And even though they're small, if we take them orally, we will digest them and break them down into amino acids. BPC-157 is different because it is native to the gut. So it can be taken as a capsule. And there are definitely ways for people in the UK to access. And I would say over the last 3 years, a growing number of providers have figured out a way to provide these things in the UK, as well as even Australia, which has historically been impossible to get peptides into, has people in Australia. As a matter of fact, one of my favorite gut healing supplements, which is an oral supplement, is made in Australia by a company called Level Up Health. And it is the most beautiful stack of three different peptides, which is BPC-157, KPV, and lirazotide. So I'm sorry about all the big words, but basically the BPC is healing. The KPV is anti-inflammatory and slightly antimicrobial. And lirazotide is a peptide that helps to seal the junctions between the cells in the GI tract. So some of you may have heard of a condition called leaky gut that we can develop, right? And that can be from eating the wrong foods. It can be from excess stress. It can be from a lot of different things. This one, BPC-157, even on its own, can be very helpful for leaky gut. But lirazotide, it turns out, is like glue for that stuff. Wow. But on top of that, in this one supplement, you also get things like L-glutamine and tributyrin, which is a very important short-chain fatty acids to feed the cells, the colonocytes, cells of the colon. He's put in zinc carnosine. So it's this kind of magical stack of all the things you could think of put together so that you can take two capsules a day and be done. So, order that online.
Is it safe? Has it been sort of scientifically tested?
So which one?
Thinking about this, the stack that you just mentioned.
So I mean, that's a really good question. And the answer you're going to get is going to vary depending on who you speak to, right? I will say to the audience that when it comes to double blind clinical, trials, we are lacking in human evidence, in human information. I will also say that the number of functional medicine doctors who are weaving these products into their practices, and the amount of learning and research and all the stuff that's going on around this, would indicate to us that there's some evidence that these are pretty darn safe. Mm-hmm. Having said that, we don't have full clarity. And there's a reason why you can't go to the drugstore and buy it off the shelf, right? Because none of these products are cleared by the FDA or the NIH or Health Canada. So they kind of operate in this funny little gray zone that for now, for the most part, they're not banned. The tragedy is that pharma companies have a massive influence on lobbyists, on lobby, in terms of lobbying governments and the bodies that regulate supplementation and drugs in both our countries, in all the countries, really. And they're working very hard on two fronts. On the one front, they're working very hard to take peptides, modify them, and reintroduce them as drugs. Mm. And we don't have time to get into this, but the most obvious of those are Ozempic and Mounjaro, these two fat loss drugs that are essentially peptides that have been modified by drug companies. That's like a whole other episode. Yeah. But we have things like thymosin alpha 1, which is a thymus peptide, so very important for immunity, really powerful for people with autoimmune issues, and is approved as a medication in about 30 different countries around the world. But in the US, the FDA has gotten to the point where they're now not even allowing compounding pharmacies to make it. So they've literally pulled it off the market. So there, you know, this is a little bit of a quagmire we're in here, right? We've kind of waded into very swampy territory, because if you went to a place like if you go to one of the repositories that is the richest repository of research, so it's called PubMed, and that's a website online. You go to PubMed and you type in thymosin alpha 1. So I'll spell it out for you guys. T-H-Y-M like Mary, O-S-I-N like November. Type in thymosin alpha 1 and whatever you want. MS, autoimmune disease, viruses, and the V word, right? Which I don't even know you want to say that, but well, those shots,
you can say.
and it's not even COVID, like even with the flu shot, like there was a study that was done that showed that in elderly people who have a tendency when they get the flu vaccine, whatever you think about the flu vaccine, it doesn't often work for them because their immune system isn't functional enough to generate that immune response to the vaccine to protect them from whatever the flu is that they're trying to be protected from. Leaving aside the conversation of how well they designed that vaccine that year, all of that, they were able to show that when they gave thymosin alpha 1 as an adjuvant with that vaccine, they had a better immune response to the vaccine, so they were better protected, right? So
I wonder if it helps people after they've taken the vaccine and they're having side effects with it.
That vaccine, I can't say, because that's more than a rabbit. All that, I think we're getting into like a groundhog den at this point, right? So, but having said all that, I think that to answer the question of are peptides safe is it's a tough question to answer. My personal opinion is that many of the better known ones seem to be quite safe, but we don't have the clinical work, the traditional ways of assessing safety available to us. So I'm not going to sit here and say everybody should be using this stuff. I think that there's a growing body of evidence that certainly when they're needed, using them at that time in the right dosage for a short period of time under guidance has yielded incredible results for people. So really incredible.
If someone was just looking to say sort of optimize their health, would you say that that's something that they should look into peptides? Or do you think it's more something that if you've got something seriously wrong with you, or not seriously wrong with you, but you have something wrong with you, then you should consider?
So I think that, you know, for health optimization, you're going to want to work with someone and make sure that you're taking care of all the basics, and then maybe use them in short stints at the right time in the right dosages. I think with the bioregulators, we have a different conversation, because the bioregulator all these peptides originate in the body, right? But the bioregulator, by definition, what the bioregulator does is it restores, or it tries to restore, homeostasis to the body. Homeostasis is a really big word that really just means balance. So a bioregulator peptide is not trying to push you over the line where you don't belong. It's really just trying to get you to even Steven. And that's not going to generate, a bodybuilder doesn't give a flying fajita about a bioregulator, because what they're looking for is bigger muscles than they should have, right? The nice thing about the bioregulator is it's very safe for that very reason. So if you have someone, for example, who has a thyroid issue, it doesn't matter if that is an overactive thyroid or an underactive thyroid. The thyroid bioregulator is there to help the body to come back, to help that thyroid gland to work better. So you can use it in both cases. So a lot of people at this point say, okay, well, isn't that kind of like a glandular, right? Isn't that like desiccated thyroid? I would say that the difference has got to be in the way that these are produced and purified, because the desiccated thyroid maybe is more raw. And so you can't give that to someone who's hyperthyroid, because you're going to just push them into overdrive. Whereas the bioregulator is probably more refined. There's less stuff in there, if you will. There's still cofactors, but not as many. And for the hyperthyroid person, it seems that it's just going to, over time, it may help to bring things down a little bit.
So the first thing is to really get absolutely clear that there's two things that create a wealthy life. And we mentioned before we started, we hit recording, the difference between being wealthy and rich. You know, you can be rich for a moment. You can go and get your credit card. You can go and hire that Ferrari. You can drive up and down the high street, take a whole lot of selfies, put it on Instagram, and whoop, you're rich for a moment. And wealth is not what you can see. It is these assets that can pay for that lifestyle. It is the insurances that if something were to happen to you, it's having your wills in place. A lot of it is not sexy, but it is so freaking deeply sexy, because it lets you get on with doing your life. So you need to get clear on just the difference there. So, and then once you're clear on that and go, okay, what the bleep do I really want? And this is a lifetime journey. It really is beautiful, stripping away. But what at its core, and go, is this mine, or am I believing I need these things in order to be worthy? So a lot of this journey is also how to come back to self, and how do I enable myself to live my life knowing we're all already worthy beyond measure. We were given this gift of life free. There was nothing we needed to do. We didn't have to work hard for it. We didn't have to sacrifice. We were just given it. So what do I want to do as an expression of that life? If I want to go on that holiday, is it from inside of me, or do I feel I have to do that in order to fit in? So now we start exploring, what do I want? And then come up with a price tag of that lifestyle and get your freedom number locked in. That, as you say, that first number, because now you can make a plan. If you don't have that, you can't even start the step of the journey. So is it £500,000? Is it £1 million? Who knows? But you need to work that out, because now you start working out the next thing. Then the key thing is to understand that nobody earns their way to freedom and nobody saves their way to freedom. Because when I first worked out my number, it was like, oh shit, how am I ever going to earn that? You know, let alone save it, and go, hang on. A huge shift that we have to learn. And it is a massive mind shift, because we're taught to think in a linear way. We're taught to think about this trade, this barter exchange for money. We don't understand how compounding works, that you can have this asset. Now you control it or own it. It earns money. That money gets reinvested. It earns. So it literally is this expanding snowball. And I'm sure you're finding that. My wealth just keeps growing exponentially, because you're using so many mixed metaphors here, but you plant that tree, and then now, maybe its first few years it has a few fruits, but you let it grow, and then it's this big thing that keeps going. So 90% of our freedom are created by assets, not by our work. But our job is to create the asset, not to earn the money. And this is the devastation. So many people think it's money that they need, and so they keep chasing the money. And I had over and over, oh yes, absolutely, I need to start investing, but I'm just going to get my money, my business working. Or when I get that next job, then I'll get to it. So it's this proverbial chasing money, which will keep everybody poor forever.
I'm nodding vigorously here because I sort of only had that light bulb moment probably about 2 or 3 years ago. I actually felt that I wasn't no longer successful because I wasn't earning this big income. You know, I used to earn a nice wage in the city, had my pension, had my healthcare, this, that, the other, all paid for. And it takes quite a while coming from that lifestyle to not having an income from a salary. I get an income from my assets, but not a salary. Yeah. And I felt a failure. My success, who I was very much tied into my job. And it wasn't till my business coach, and I believe everyone should have a coach, told me, you not see how successful you are. You don't need to work a day in your life, and your assets keep you where you are, you know, keep you going. Yeah. And you have this great lifestyle of being able to do whatever you want to do and the time and the freedom to do it, which is amazing. But I think that mindset, it was a huge shift in that.
You've covered such a vital thing, because our entire education, what we're taught is that our worthiness is linked with earning the money coming in. Even as people, I'm an entrepreneur, I've got a seven-figure business. Okay, you're talking about top-line revenue. It's meaningless, but we tout this BS around. And so now we have created this fixation, and essentially we are societies that worship at the altar of income. In relationships, the person who earns more is deemed to be the one who then should manage the money. BS. Some people are great at bringing it in. Other people are great at managing and investing it. They're different skill sets, and none of them define our worthiness. But I so love you that you brought this up, because like you, when I had a very successful engineering career, when I worked all over, and I consciously chose to let go of that, but I really had to grapple with this. Where's my significance? Where's my worthiness if I'm not getting this Pavlov's dog? Yay, I've got my kick. The world's told me I'm okay.
And I get this salary thing every month, and it goes into my bank accounts, and then everything for you.
I'm okay, I'm worthy. The world's deemed me worthy. So thank you for bringing this, because this is huge. And it also, believing that that's important keeps people on that slavery train, because now to stop and create assets does require a shift. It is a delayed gratification thing. So it is an effort that now in our businesses, in our world, basically, if we can think assets first in every aspect of our life, we will succeed. And I know you do a lot in the healthcare with our wealth and health. It is doing that work, building the structure, the frame, the muscle that will then last you forever. That's the asset-based thinking versus the, what's that quick pill I can buy that will lose me, you know, that quick hit, that sugar rush, that's the income obsession versus the assets is really going, oh, let me slow down and create some systems and processes in my business so it can run on automation. No, and I'm too busy. I'll get to that, but now I've got to go to earn income.
Now it's this time I need to earn the money so I can do this. Yes.
So now, if you know what your asset, the what's called your net worth, which is your balance sheet, which is your assets, the value of the assets minus your liabilities. Now you've got a target to go. And this is the most important thing. You've got to have that target. The second step is you have to start creating these assets. No assets, no freedom. It's a law of nature, like fucking gravity. No assets, no freedom. No assets, no freedom. It's just, you're not going to get around it.
How would you know, because there are obviously various different asset classes that we can talk about. Are there any right, I chose a certain asset class at the beginning, and I diversify now. And I did that because it was something that was sort of ingrained with my father was in property. Yeah. And I went to property first. I started investing in property. Is there any way that you think there is a certain asset class that's right for an individual?
So you do need to have a range of assets. You know, it is that proverbial, never have one egg. Most people only have themselves, they have the one egg, let alone multiple eggs in multiple baskets. I love the stock market. I have assets in all asset classes. There's actually 8 broad asset classes that I recommend people should be in to ultimately get that diversified portfolio. So we need diversification and asset allocation, because we want stability on the journey, different asset classes perform in different markets, so we want that mix. So the first one that I think everybody should be in, and it's the easiest one, and it's the one where you can use many tax allowances that the government gives you, is our stocks and shares. And basically, you're just owning a share in great business around the world. Super easy. You do it from your phone. You have, so for those of you in the UK listening to it, you have your friggin' ISA. It is the sexiest friggin' account you can have. But most people think their ISA is like a water jug. So they go and get a cash ISA. It's one of the sexiest investment accounts you can have. And they put water in it. And then they do nothing with it. It's like getting an electric kettle and then you never plug it in. You do not want a friggin' cash ISA. You need stocks and shares, because effectively you're protecting, you've got amazing tax allowance. Costs are one of the biggest things that can impact our investments. So stocks and shares, super straightforward, really easy to do. Index practice, I have a masterclass on that. You can read it in the Whale Shape, but you can do that. You can set it up on autopilot. So I really believe everybody should get this in, and this becomes the automatic, unconscious, happens automation, because our wealth, our health is created by our habits. And this is key to set that regular investing. And that's why I love that asset class. Easy access, very low cost. You can start with £25 in your ISA. That really is, because it's the habit. Then absolutely, real estate is, I call it, you know, wealth Play-Doh. There are so many assets and things you can do with that. So building on your stocks and shares, then go into real estate. And, you know, there's 3 key ways you can do real estate. You can do it through a fund, through a real estate investment trust in your ISA, in your SIP, in your property. You can do it direct. And that is fantastic for leverage. So real estate is the easiest asset class to use other people's money. And this is when you really start understanding, which, you know, is the power of leverage. This is how you now take a 8% return and turn it into a 40% return. You know, there's so many things I want to share with you, but really, when it comes to wealth creation, there's only 3 things we have: the time to let compounding work, the money we can put in, the seed money, and then the rate at which we can get those assets working. So, you know, if you want a shorter period of time to get there, or maybe you've left it a bit late, you've maybe don't have loads of money to put in, then you need to get those assets working harder. And then using leverage, using strategies like that, is really rocket fuel for the wealth.
That is just huge, actually, in terms of the penny dropping, having spent, as I say, spent the majority of my life trying to figure out how to lose weight, even though I wasn't really overweight, just becoming obsessed with, I was in exactly that sort of chain, as a lot of, I think a lot of women are, that just eat less or go on some crazy diet and exercise all the time, go to this class, that class, this cardio, that cardio, and literally eat like a pigeon and hope you lose weight, and really realize that you're just fatigued, but you're sort of getting energy by thinking, oh, but I've just got to get through the next training session and I'll just eat something quickly now, and you'll never relax. So that it actually completely makes sense to me now, and I think, why don't more people know that? And as you say, it's just, it's that balance, that sweet spot. So I guess the next question would be, is how do you reach that sweet spot? And I guess it's different for everybody. And yes, is it the same for men, and is it the same for women? Having again gone through this whole 20 years of my life being told, train like a man, there isn't any difference. Of course, we can train like men. And I was a very much an alpha woman in the city, doing the whole woman in a man's world. And yeah, I can train like a man. Of course I can. And now I completely realize I couldn't. And it was a complete ego thing.
Yeah. Well, it is interesting, right? Because we're also in an interesting cultural time, aren't we? Where we're starting to kind of see, and by the way, the science sort of addresses this. There are real differences, biologically speaking, between male and female. And now we're talking about sex, not gender, right? We're talking about, you know, male genitalia, female genitalia. That's that sexual dimorphism. There are real differences biologically. We know that. Women menstruate, men do not. Women have two major sex steroids, men have one. Women go through five stages of hormonal life stages, men go through two at best, right? And so there are real differences here. Women's hormones fluctuate throughout the month, men don't. Now, at the same time, what we also know, and I just want to address this, we also know that just like on average, men are taller than women, you will certainly find certain women who are taller than most men, right? So we kind of look at this idea that we can look at generalities. And what we do see with gender now is that there is more more nuance than just straight male, female. But with all that said and acknowledging that, what we need to understand is that, yes, men and women are different biologically. For most people, that's a no-duh moment. It's like, yeah, duh. Just think about menses versus men don't menstruate, right? At the same time, then we have to acknowledge that more mature women are different than younger women. As women approach perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause, pregnancy changes, that a pregnant woman is a woman who's going to be very different than a non-pregnant woman. There's just these gradations. And then more importantly, every woman and every man is different than every other woman and every man. And so your question was, how do we account for this individuality? Well, we have to learn how the metabolism speaks, and it doesn't speak, you know, English or Spanish or French. It speaks metabolism. And that language is a language of biofeedback. So things like the way you're sleeping, whether your sleep is good quantity and good quality and not fragmented, things like mood, you know, can you remain focused? You know, are you having, are you stuck in anxiety and depression or resistance or frustration and these kinds of things? What's going on with hunger, energy, and cravings? We talked about that, right? We talked about this idea of, you know, you can have excess hunger, unpredictable energy, unrelenting cravings. But these things, things like sleep, hunger, mood, energy, and cravings, I call, this is a funny little acronym I'm known for called SHMEC that everyone laughs about. But the idea of SHMEC being in check versus out of check. If sleep, hunger, mood, energy, and cravings is in check, this probably means your metabolism is not under stress, that your metabolism is handling things just fine. If SHMEC is out of check, in other words, sleep is difficult and fragmented, mood is changing and volatile, energy is unpredictable and unstable, hunger is constant and unrelenting, cravings for all these kinds of foods, that tells you that your metabolism is perhaps under stress. And so the first thing to understand is, how do we understand what works for us? We first have to understand how to read the metabolism. If SHMEC's in check, you're probably just fine, and you are going to be able to push hard on the metabolism, diet, exercise, etc. If SHMEC goes out of check, that means things aren't fine. And think about this from a female perspective, which I've worked with my whole life. Think about how a woman might feel during the first half of her menstrual cycle, right, where she's a week prior to ovulation versus a week prior to menses. She's going to have a whole different sort of subset of sleep, hunger, mood, energy, and cravings. And then once you understand that, you can start to adjust your diet to stabilize sleep, hunger, mood, energy, and cravings first. That's the first thing you do. Get sleep, hunger, mood, energy, and cravings under control. Once it is under control, now your metabolism is in a place of strength. Now you can push on it a little bit. And when you do begin to push on it, you'll see how far it can go. And it's sort of this back and forth playing metabolic detective. You know, so Sonia has to be a metabolic detective. Jade has to be a metabolic detective. All the people listening to this conversation right now, we need to stop being dieters, start being metabolic detectives. How do we do that? We learn to read the signals that our body is sending, and then we learn to adjust and find the right mix of macronutrients and micronutrients, as well as exercise, that keep us in that stable place.
So I guess a lot of people look at almost what they're ingesting in terms of food and, you know, okay, is this making me feel good? Am I, you know, am I allergic to this type of food? Does this make me put on weight? Do I bloat with this food? So I think there's a lot of work around that. But actually all the other things that you said, sleep, hunger, mood, I know out of those categories, the one thing that really affects me is sleep. All the other things I'm really good with, but it's the sleep that's the biggest, I'd say is my biggest issue that I know, you know, when I'm actually it's just quite constant is the sleep thing. And that could be, well, I guess various different reasons why you know your sleep is affected. But do you, once you've worked out that one thing or that two things, or maybe it's all of those things, is that when you can then start working on your diet and exercise program?
Yes, that's exactly right. In other words, like what I oftentimes say, and the listeners can remember this whenever you get in, you know, an argument or a debate about diet, some people say it's just about calories, and you should ask them, how many calories does sleep have? How many calories does stress have? And what you're alluding to here is that stress and sleep, while you can't eat them, they do have a lot of calories. Because if you get sleep deprived or you're under a lot of stress, you're likely to overeat. And so exactly what you said, the first thing is get your biofeedback stable. We all know what it's like trying to eat healthily or be on a diet when we're hungry and craving all the time. When we're in that case, we're fighting ourselves constantly. So step one is get sleep, hunger, mood, energy, and cravings. And by the way, Sonia, it's not just sleep, hunger, mood, energy, and cravings. Schmeck is a catch-all phrase for exercise performance, exercise recovery, signs and symptoms like digestive health, headaches. When it comes to women, libido, right? Menses are two factors that you want to look at. For men, it's libido and erections, right? So all of these things, all the signs and symptoms, all the things that your body is telling you, you want to take into account. All of that is Schmeck. And so what the first job is to get Schmeck in check, right? Once you do that, then you start going the following. And here's the way that I would do this to make it very simple. Let's say Sonia and I wake up and we have breakfast, right? And let's say you and I, we have, let's say, bacon and eggs, okay? Or bangers and eggs, right? If we're in London, right? So what's going to happen now is we want to look for the next 4 to 6 hours, a good, healthy, flexible metabolism. You and I should be able to go for 4 to 6 hours without hunger, without cravings, and with stable energy. And at the end of that 4 to 6 hours, we should be ready to eat better foods, right? And healthier foods and less of those foods. In other words, we should be like, hey, what do you want to get for lunch? And you're like, well, let's get a salad with maybe chicken breasts on it. And we should both be like, oh, that sounds great, and be satisfied with that, versus let's go get burgers or pizza or, you know, Indian food or Thai and just pig out. Because what we do for breakfast, what we eat or don't eat, should positively impact what we choose to eat, how much we eat, what we crave to eat at lunch and dinner. So what most people do is they just think about this meal as if it's independent from every other meal. And that's not the case. What you eat or don't eat for breakfast will impact what you eat or don't eat for lunch, will impact what you eat or don't eat for dinner.
Yeah, so there are two things. When you receive money, that means somebody chose you to give money to. Say if you're working for a company, they chose you as their employee. And if you're working freelance, they chose you out of 20,000 other coaches. They chose you to be their coach. So there are so many reasons for you to appreciate them for giving you the money, giving you the work, because that's how you got paid. So you can appreciate your boss, your company that you're working for, or your clients. Thank you so much for your business. You know, without this money, I cannot pay for the food, pay for the, you know, electricity and all that. So thank you for trusting me. Thank you for choosing me. Thank you for giving me the money. And when you feel that, you really feel warm. You feel very open to your clients, and your clients would feel it. And then they are more likely to give you more clients. It happened to me a few times, and I did even an experiment. I divided my clients into two groups. One I brought small something, or just say thank you more than the first group. And the first group, I didn't do anything. And 6 months later, with the group, I didn't do nothing. I didn't do anything. I got some referrals. It's okay. But the second group, I always brought something nice, something appreciation, like a little gift. And I got so many referrals from the second group. It's because I showed my appreciation for the business. So they thought, okay, if he appreciates us, we should send more clients to them. So I got more referrals. So when you appreciate, they appreciate you back. And the same thing can happen when you pay bills, when you pay at the restaurant or cashier, you can say, thank you for the food. Thank you for the service. Thank you for the thing that I'm buying. I was looking for stuff like this. I love this cup, you know, or like one of the cups come from UK. You know, I brought it from UK. And thank you for this. You know, these days it's hard to find something made in UK, you know, so wow, I found it. So I appreciated the person for giving me the opportunity to buy the cup. So they were very happy. So we're both happy. So you can spend your money that way. So by appreciating both money coming in and going out, you can start the cycle of appreciation. And when appreciation happens, you are more vibrant. And then somehow you attract more opportunities, more happy money into your life.
So I guess up until a few years ago, I wasn't much of a spender, believe it or not. So I make money, I invest in money. And it was really interesting listening to the different money types and money personalities.
Yes,
you define the money personalities, and I sort of held on to my money. Mm-hmm. I guess I always was thinking about the future. You know, what mm-hmm. if? What if? What if? And it wasn't until a couple of years ago, actually, when I started working with a money mindset coach, and he really helped me with that whole thing. And the one thing that I found, or the one thing that I've changed, is that I now spend money, and not frivolously, but I don't hold it like I used to. Does that make sense? And it feels good.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain a little bit more about why that would attract money in? Because it really sort of has. It's really strange because it's sort of counterintuitive. You think if you spend money, you're gonna have less money, so you want to get hold of it. But actually, it's the opposite.
Yeah, it's because you have less attachment to money.
Mm.
You know, the same goes with relationship. If you're attached to somebody, don't go. You try to hold on. The other.
Oh, I've made that mistake as well.
don't hold on to me. So if you let go of the person, you become more attractive.
Yeah.
But I think if you have less attachment, things go fast. Things go happen faster, and then you feel less worried about the thing because you let go of it easily. That means subconsciously, you knew that you were going to get it soon. So if you just have a hard time letting go, that means you know in your heart that it may be hard for you to get the money again. So like by letting go of money easily, you're sending a message to your subconscious that you will get the money very quickly. So by letting go of attachment, somehow you receive money, but that's a law of the universe. And that's what I was taught by my mentors. So that's how letting go of money is the fastest way to get your money back.
I think that's so important. I just want, can you repeat that again? Because that's like so fundamental for people to hear.
Right, yeah. It, once you let go of your money fast, the money can go fast and then it will come back fast. But if you have a hard time letting go, the money cannot go. That means money cannot come back. So if you let go of money fast, it's an angel. You know, money is an angel. Just send your money angels out of your home, and you can say, you can bless them. Bless as many people as you want, and then come back to me with more angels. And they say like, ding, 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 and then they're flying. And then they're going to fly back to me. That's how I feel with me.
I love that. I absolutely love that. And I do think it's so true. And another thing you said is that it's deep down in the subconscious. And that you're sort of by doing this, you're letting your subconscious know that you're going to receive money, and it's going to come back in again. I think a lot of people, though, do have blocks around money. And we've talked about some of them forming from childhood and from how we're brought up. How can we sort of remove some of those common blocks?
Yeah.
Can we sort of resolve them?
There are so many techniques that I have developed over the past 20 years. The easy one is, when you're afraid of money, just focus on your breathing. You know, when you think of money, it's like inhaling and exhaling. So it's like when you receive money, when you make money, you're inhaling the air. And then when you inhale air in your lungs, and would you worry about letting go of your breath? Because you may not be able to get your air back. You know, we do it very automatically. So do it consciously. Breathe in and hold it. Let it out. By letting out, you can breathe in more. So once you're just a little bit worried about money or afraid of money, just breathe out. That's like letting go of money. And then automatically money comes in. So breathing and out air as if money is that easy.
Wow, that's I'm sure some people will think, I mean, I love that, because I think it is, there's something about releasing something deep down. And sometimes we sort of spend time on thinking, oh gosh, how do I do this, and the more we're thinking about what to do about it, we're sort of causing that, I think, maybe putting more tension around the block, mm-hmm. rather than just, like you say, just letting go, which sometimes can be the hardest thing, though.
Yeah, so trusting is the hardest part of our life. And it's not just with money. It's about anything. You know, we always have a choice of choosing a happy future and a happy future, 50-50. But we tend to choose our negative future in our imagination, so we will not get disappointed. If we imagine a positive future, and then if that didn't happen, we'd get disappointed. So by trying to avoid the disappointment in the future, by imagining a good future, and then it didn't happen, and then I'll get depressed, I choose the bad one first. And then instead of just feeling like, wow, like, you know, the worst didn't happen, now I feel good. So you want to feel good about the bad things didn't happen. So, you know, it's like we're always trading in our mind. You know, do we want to get depressed by the best thing didn't happen? Or do you want to feel relieved that the worst thing didn't happen?
I hope you enjoyed the best bits of 2023. And I'd just like to thank you so much with all of my heart for following the show. We've got some great guests in 2024. So please, you know what to do. Follow, share, subscribe, and leave a review.